Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is July 31st, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. I am your host, Austin Walker. Joining me, Patrick Klepek. Danielle is sick. Rob is taking the day off. It's the end of July.
Not sick.
Are you sure? Rob is not sick.
He's enjoying himself.
Yeah, he's living his life, his best life, I hope. That's all good. That's the good stuff. It's the end of the month, and I feel like the thing that happens in the summer is like you just need to take a day.
Here's a question. Sure. If you're constructing the 3-day weekend,
yeah,
is it better to take Friday off or Monday off?
That has changed for me in the last year.
Okay.
So if you'd gone back to when I was a Giant Bomb,
yeah,
I would rather take the Friday off.
Right.
Partially because we took Mondays as our work from home day at Giant Bomb.
Yeah, things kind of wound down on Fridays at that place. At least that's how it was when I was there.
Right, anyway. So it never felt bad that I wasn't there on a Friday. I mean, like, we did streams and stuff, so it would suck to some degree.
Right,
but, like,
right.
You know, it's not a busy day. Also, as someone who's writing news, chances are there weren't going to be big news drops in gaming on a Friday. Like, that stuff wasn't going to – so I knew I wasn't, like, letting anybody down. Whereas I kind of – Monday was like, I want to be there. I want to be in our weekly meeting on Monday. I want to be able to, like, get the day – or get the week organized around that. And so, like, at the time, it was, like, not a big deal to take off Mondays because, like, whatever. Here I feel like I could never take off.
We've had to intervene to get you to take days off.
Right. And I think here I could only, the 3-day weekend couldn't, I could never take the Monday. I could never take the Monday because there's too much on it. Like I would feel like I'd come in on Tuesday and feel like I have too much on my plate now. Whereas when I leave on Friday, you at least get the feeling like, I'll catch up with it on Monday. It'll be fine. You know what I mean?
Okay, let's alternate reality, Austin. Where like you're not worrying about your work is not determining a Monday or Friday. I'm just saying like the rhythm of a 3-day weekend, because I used to be a Friday person, but I think I've turned in to a Monday person where like the feeling of like Sundays are both like wonderful and terrible.
Yeah, totally.
Because you wake up
totally
and you're like, I got a full day to myself, but not really. Like, you start hitting the evening, and it's like, it's Sunday, you should probably go to bed early.
Yep.
Like, probably shouldn't have a drink. Like, I got to get up.
But then if you're off, you wake up the next morning, and, like, everybody else is working, and you slept in.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a great feeling. But now the thing is, where I'm at in my life, that makes me feel bad. I'm like, oh, no, Patrick and Danielle and Rob and Danica, they're all hustling. They're all working. Uh-oh, I can't just not be doing this.
Stop ruining our alternate reality.
All right,
there are no pressures here. The alternate reality is that you can just enjoy.
But everybody else in the world is still working. It's just I don't have to worry about this place. I can see that argument. But the alternative is Friday means you get to Thursday and you get to 2 p.m. on Thursday.
True. And it's basically over.
It's over. Like, and you hit that point where like, I can't believe I have a fucking one more day this. I don't have another day this week. I'm done. Like, I'm checking out. I'm going to go walk to the kitchen and get some fruit snacks. I'm going to get some water. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to, like, make sure my email is in order. And, you know, I might leave at 4:30. I might leave early. Yeah, exactly.
I might leave at 6:30 instead of 9.
I'm going to call my friend who works retail and is off on Fridays and be like, hey, do you want to go to a movie and a bar tonight? Because that's – you know what I mean? Like you suddenly slip into this other world where other people aren't in this rigid 5-day week. It's great. Anyway, I think they're both good. I think what I love is a 3-day weekend. That's what I love generally. The worst is definitely a midweek day off. Not the worst.
This July 4th was stressful until I found out we were very fortunate to work for a company that gave. So this year, people aren't familiar or for not from the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we get traditionally pretty much everyone gets July 4th off, but it moved the day of the, you know, the week it's on moved in. We were in a great period a couple of years ago. You're getting July 4th on a Thursday, a Friday. Yeah, it kind of sucks on a Saturday or Sunday because you don't get that day off. But now we're in a long, shitty stretch where it was on, what, Wednesday this year. And so, or no, wait. No,
it was on Tuesday. It was on Tuesday. So
Tuesday.
We got Monday, Tuesday.
And so a lot of people get that Monday off, but not everyone gets that Monday off. We got that Monday off. Because imagine in the world where you didn't get that Monday off. That's bad.
That's bad. Well, I had to do – so sidebar, I did an interview with NPR. They have a thing called The Big Listen, which is a podcast about podcast culture.
All right.
And I did one to talk about Friends at the Table. We had just launched the Patreon, and somebody wanted to talk to us. And so I talked to this reporter from NPR on July 3rd. And I was like, oh, it's so great that you made time today on the day off to meet. And she was like, excuse me? And I was like, oh, NPR didn't give y'all – the day off? She's like, no, I've been in the office since 9 a.m., actually, sir. We have off tomorrow, but I'm still going to come in because I'm a reporter and I have to do work. And I was like, all right, I feel really bad for you. Like, you're very nice. Good luck.
When I was at Giant Bomb, I remember asking an HR person about, like, how companies decide whether to give people that day off, like that Monday in which it's not required or it's not an official holiday, like, on the corporate schedule. And the way they put it was, like, so there are going to be people, like, in especially, like, Vice would qualify. Right. The building wasn't as big as CBS. But, like, you know, when you got hundreds or thousands of employees, right? And a day like that, the vast majority of people, even if the company doesn't give them that day off, are going to take that day. They'll just take the vacation day and turn that into a four-day weekend,
right?
But you're going to get people that don't. Or you're going to get people that are saving those vacation days to use them later in the year. Understandable position. Or you're going to get the people that are like, you know what? When no one comes in, I don't got to do shit at work today. So I'm going to come into work and not use vacation day, but basically just go on YouTube, play a game or something.
Mm-hmm.
So they really
run those numbers.
Right. Well, see, when you run those numbers, when you have one person in the office, that means you got to have like a cleaning crew. Yep. You got to have security.
Yep.
And so they ran the numbers and the amount of people. Like, it just didn't mathematically make sense. So they started – it saved them money to give a vacation day to people rather than pay for all the sort of mundane shit that goes into maintaining an office.
Oh, my God. It all comes down to money. Like,
money.
I'm not surprised, but it all comes down to money, whether or not you get that day. Anyway, listen, we're almost out of July. It's going to be August soon. We are – I want to say we're just about out of – I'm going to say it. We're out of whatever slump exists anymore in the middle of the year.
I think Pyre was like sort of like the – or Splatoon maybe.
Splatoon 2?
Pyre. There's like one game a week.
Yeah. I'd say Splatoon 2 is maybe where we draw the line this year and say this is when – which really – so for people who maybe just started playing games or who don't know what we're talking about, for years people thought of the first, you know – two-thirds of the year, the first three-fourths of the year is being kind of dead, right? You come out of the holidays, you go into a slow winter, there's not that many games that come out, maybe a couple things come out in the spring, and then the summer is kind of dead, and you kind of play like long RPGs, you're not like chasing stuff. And there's still games are coming out, but no big blockbusters come out. And then I'd say like 5 years ago, maybe it was, in my mind it was like, when did Red Dead come out? Was Red Dead a spring game?
Red Dead came out in May. Like there was like a transition in film and video games.
Totally.
Which is like embracing the year-round like blockbuster. Like, you know, you've got movies like Deadpool and stuff that like come out in March now because turns out people still want to do things the rest of the year and you don't have to put everything in October and November.
Totally. GTA 4 looks like it came out in April. And around then, the other thing that was happening was indie games were getting big, right? Like independent game development was getting more affordable. People were trying to make games on their own. And so suddenly there's like a lot of stuff coming out that was good in that space. And then bit by bit, it's gotten to where that little kind of summer slump has gotten smaller and smaller. And now, yeah, I guess like looking at this list, I guess I would say that like from late May until mid-July, it was the slow time. But even then, that's like...
There was still stuff. It certainly wasn't as dead as it used to be back in the day. But it feels like August is really the... Like, we're going to start getting into, oh, shit, like, I need to get that chicken dinner in Battlegrounds because I'm just not going to have the time play this game nearly as much as I was before.
So let's talk about August. Just like, it's not a thing we do that often, but like, I feel like we're in it now. So you have Pyre, Splatoon 2, obviously. Tacoma is out in
Wednesday.
3 days, 2 days. I haven't played that yet. I'm excited to check that out.
I finished it over the weekend. I'll have the closest thing we have to a review on Wednesday.
Impressions, I think, is internally what we say.
Hands-on.
Yeah, hands-on thoughts, a take. You'll have a hot take.
We don't do reviews. We do takes.
We do takes. Hashtag takes here at Waypoint. Lawbreakers comes out. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, which is by Ninja Theory. Ninja Theory. I always get their name.
You know what? Fuck Devil May Cry fans, because Devil May Cry was super good.
I've heard
the
that.
Way that people hardcore fans railed against that game and stopped a sequel from happening bums me out to this day. Because I didn't like the other Devil May Cry games, but a lot of that fan base
didn't like it.
Oh, I did.
Oh, okay.
I'd like the DMC series, but I really enjoyed Ninja Theory's take on it, and the community just railed against that game in a way that was just. He did not give it a chance. I realized he was a sarcastic pretty boy. I get it.
Yeah.
But that was a good game. The combat was great, and the story was really fun, and that fucking... I fought a Fox News broadcaster in a boss battle.
Yep. The fucking, off-brand Bill O'Reilly is in that game, and you fight him inside of, a living...
Like a red-blue platforming thing, right? Wasn't it?
Well, it's as if you're on a newscast, the Chirons are all around you and stuff. It's really good.
God.
That's a really cool fight scene. Lawbreakers is out this month, which I haven't played, but I hear is really good. I think it's been in early access. It's coming out or open beta.
It's been going in and out of closed and open beta. It's in an open beta. I think it was over the weekend. I'm going to... as someone that was a huge fan of, enjoyed the Gears of War games, but was hugely into Unreal Tournament.
Okay.
And this is essentially Cliff Bleszinski coming back to make, not another Unreal Tournament, but making a very focused sort of arena shooter in the larger post Team Fortress Overwatch sort of world.
I'm curious
to dip my toes into it to see sort of what he's making there, because it is treacherous. This game is not. It's not an Overwatch game. It's a different style of shooter, but everything exists in the conversation around a game like Overwatch.
Right.
I'm going to put some hours into this week.
And I'm curious to see. So a thing like Overwatch, one of the things that's something like Overwatch or other games that have a higher degree of accessibility than hardcore games inside of a genre can do is inject a new set of players into a genre. Make them interested in a sort of gameplay that they would otherwise not look at, right? So, for me right now, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds has made me itchy for more games like that.
Yeah.
So where, I just saw Escape from Tarkov is going into closed beta. That's the game from
the X-Stalker devs.
That's going into closed beta. And I looked at it and I was oh, man, I kind of want to play this thing because it feels like it would scratch similar itches. And I feel I'm curious if Overwatch has done that for the competitive shooter scene also, where I've seen a lot of people in my feed who've been in and out of these betas for Lawbreakers saying actually, Lawbreakers might be a better game. A better competitive shooter than Overwatch is. It offers more tactical depth. It offers maybe the world and the characters aren't as bright and charming, but it has its own flair and the level design is really smart and the abilities interact in really cool ways and stuff like that. So I'm curious if it finds a fan base and frankly, I'm just kind of curious how it is. So I'll definitely try to at least peek at that. Other stuff this month, Agents of Mayhem, which I have such mixed feelings on based on my E3 time with it. I played it for an hour, or 80 minutes.
So you played it, an hour of it this year. I played an hour of it last year, and I came out of it going, ugh.
Yeah. I think that the writing and characterization is bad. I think that it's
Saints Row towed a very tight line of, it did that line in a way that, made me laugh more often than it made me cringe.
Yeah.
And Agents of Mayhem made me cringe more often than it was
making me
laugh.
I cringed a lot while watching it. The thing that was
trying too hard was the feeling I got.
Yes, it was definitely trying too hard. Well, it was trying too hard, and sometimes you can try the right amount and still not be funny.
You know
what I mean?
You can give someone the elements of a joke and
totally,
still not tell
and they can
it very
still
well.
Not tell it great. And I think there was a lot of that going on from what I saw. I played a pretty substantial amount, like I said, at E3. It's probably a 30-hour game or something. I played an hour, so what the fuck do I know?
Right.
But there's enough there in that time that I spent where I was I actually really like the mechanics of this. I really like leveling up characters. They kind of just gave me the controller and were all right, here is you are 15 hours into this game. This is what the mid-game looks like, feels like. Here's how the characters interact. You build teams. This is like, there's stuff that I didn't know about this game. So you build teams of three people when you go out into the world, and their abilities interact in really interesting ways. Or like, maybe you have somebody who causes fear on people to cause them to run away or to group up or whatever. And you have another character who can set like traps, and the bonuses are all really interesting. There's lots of like, ability synergies happening. And so that part of my brain, who was like interested in interesting character builds, was like all on fire because of this. And like, I think that the combat felt really good. It felt like – it reminded me of what I liked about the Mass Effect Andromeda combat, in that it was very agility-focused, very like movement-focused. It wasn't like a cover shooter. Right. It felt like a step up from the combat in the Saints Row series, which has always been kind of mediocre at best.
Well, yeah, that's the question, is like if the humor carried the mechanics
right.
in Saints Row,
yes.
can the mechanics carry – the humor in Mages of Mayhem? And I think the reason this game has had some trouble sort of establishing some traction is that the draw of
yep.
what Volition had created for yep. the last like 5-6 years was, look, we're going to overlook the mechanics because we're really here for the eccentric humor, like yep. the voice they found in like Saints 3 and beyond. And I just worry that even if this game plays pretty well, it's going to have a hard time finding an audience.
Me too.
Because the audience that wanted to show up for a Volition game doesn't necessarily want to show up for this game. And maybe it finds a new audience, but I've just...
Sure.
This game has been... had trouble sort of like... it's had trouble figuring out like how to position itself, pitch itself, and maybe when it's actually here and it's not... Maybe the marketing has just failed the game, right?
Right.
Like maybe
right.
they just haven't... They're trying to pitch it as a Saints Row game when it's not.
Right.
And maybe you should have pitched it as something else.
Yeah, the thing someone said to me was, like, the way to play this game is going to be... There's, like, 15 characters, 18 characters or something that you get in your total team. It's like, pick the 3 or 4 or 5 who you think are not, like, abrasive and just play as those characters. And that's my plan for that game. So I'm curious. Right. We'll see how it goes. Apparently City Skylines is coming to PS4. We don't need to just linger on that, but that's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
That's cool. Matterfall, which we played at E3.
Yeah, it looked interesting.
Housemarque. It's not the game you want. It's not the Housemarque.
No, it's... Yeah, I basically spent like the better part of my demo for a Housemarque just asking them to make a sequel to another game that they're never going to make a sequel to. And they said... We'll pass on your thoughts.
Yep.
And I was like, well, it's nice to be listened to, even if I know you're ignoring me.
Yep. Nidhogg 2, also cool. I'm excited for people to actually play that, because I played that for a while against some people at an event before E3 and had a lot of fun with it. It's really good in motion. It feels good, even though I don't – my first blush art design was not great, but I've come around on it.
Right.
Sonic Mania, which
– Eh. I'll play it for 15 minutes.
The bosses are cool, is what I'll say. There's a boss I'm not allowed to talk about that I think is so good.
You're still not allowed to talk about
it? Like, they were like, this is the one thing about this demo you can never talk about, like, until the game is out. But it's so good. Actually, that game may have gotten delayed again. Did Sonic Mania get delayed again? Is that in September now? Is this list bad? Yes. Yep. Sonic Mania, I think, maybe got delayed until September. So this list is bad. Great. Good. No Sonic Mania for you. Some games just never come out. Are you excited for the new Uncharted, Lost Legacy? Is that a thing you're...
It's funny because last week we were talking about video games. There was a question from the question bucket that was like, what games do you play that had gameplay that you aren't a super fan of, but you play for the story?
Uh-huh.
Like, Uncharted might have secretly been the actual answer to that.
Totally.
Like, I love the storytelling in those games for the most part, and I find the characters like really interesting and endearing, and the idea of playing like this one where it's like set in, it's like the Middle East, right? Like somewhere, I think. Anyway, it's like two female leads.
I'm pretty sure.
Two women leads like sounds really interesting. Like the banter I've seen in the trailers looks like I would watch that movie for, you know, 6
right.
hours.
Right.
I'm curious if the gameplay will be any more, I don't know. I've just never really connected with the gunplay in the Uncharted series,
right.
So I'll play that because I've played the other ones before. It's too late now. But Danielle seemed really interested in it from what she played. She wrote some impressions on the site. I think at the early.
She
part
seems
of
positive.
Week.
Yeah, there's like a cool open, like a micro open world setup for at least what
maybe.
She saw. Well,
sure.
From what she saw, where like you're just in a jeep out in a kind of a big open environment that you can explore.
Yeah, there's a section of that in Uncharted
like
4
that
was really
right.
interesting.
Right, so I'm
some
curious
of maybe
to see.
Doubling down on some of that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you got Madden, of course, obviously.
Oh, of course.
I'm going to play this Madden. I've just decided, based on what I saw at E3, based on their story mode stuff, I want to play the story mode.
Oh, right.
Right. So, like, suddenly I'm in for this year of Madden. I want to see the story of this character. I want to see how that's delivered. I'm always interested in when companies want to deliver, like, TV-style narratives. Give it a shot. You know, like, the thing is, I almost always want to play about a story mode's worth of Madden every year, and that isn't a thing. That hasn't been a thing in Madden. I haven't ever had, like, oh, here's my 8-hour Madden experience. Like, I'll get it and play a season worth or something, you know? But, like, that's not the same. It doesn't scratch the same itch. And so if I can play through, like, an interesting story with cutscenes and stuff, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
A small aside, understandably, you would go past it. So this game, A White Day, A Labyrinth Named School.
Yeah, that's
a
name.
Full-fledged remake for one of the most famous indie horror games that came out of Korea a number of years ago.
2001, and, originally.
Yeah, it came out on mobile stuff, I think, a couple of years back. But I think it was, like, fan-translated. I never got around to it, but people were always telling me over the years, like, hey, you need to check out White Day. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting historical footnote and also very effective. So I'm not sure how the remake is going to be, but I am super curious to check it out because of how much I've heard about
it's a good
it
name.
In the past. Yeah, Labyrinth Named School.
Yeah.
It's very catchy, just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious how it, I'm curious what that original was. Now I want
to
read about this.
Yeah,
not now, not in the middle of this podcast.
Tell that story.
Yeah, later I'll read about it. Absolver, also a small game coming out that I think has been at every E3 and PAX for the last couple of years.
I feel like that's going to be a game that I look at and go, I really want to play that. And then you're going to ask me in December, did you play it? Oh, I still meant to.
yeah, same. We played a little bit of it at E3. We dueled. Your instructor did not instruct you well enough to know some
key. No, didn't give
me
the right fucking details. That's going to be my explanation for you beating me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's actually a fair explanation. Also, I was very good. you ever have an experience where you hear about a game for so long and people are so hyped on it that you build it up? And then it's not just like, oh, they were wrong. It's not like backlash. I'm not like, oh, yeah, they were idiots for thinking this game was good. It's just like, oh, in my mind, it maybe controlled a little different, or it wasn't as fiddly, or it wasn't – like, I didn't have to contend with the fact that it was a real game. I just had to think about it in my head, and it might have been safer up there. Right? Oh, yeah, Absolver is cool. And like, oh, yeah, it's cool, but I'm not like – I thought I'd come out of the demo waving the flag for it, you know, and instead I'm like, yeah, it seems all right. If I have some time that week, I'll check it out, you know. I just want to read this one, which is Everybody's Golf, which is, I believe,
that's the Sony franchise.
It's a Hot Shots Golf. Yeah, it's a Hot Shots Golf.
Those are good games.
Those are good games, and I like golf games in general, and I'll play some Everybody's Golf. I like the name. Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle
I am hyped for that game.
Yeah, I'm also hyped for that game. It is not a thing that I anticipated being excited for.
No.
Though now that I think about it, XCOM 2 Chosen War is it the same week? Or is that this month? That's next month also. It's not on this day. It's August 29th. I think they're coming out within a day of each other.
What?
I hadn't noticed that before.
That's very good.
That's extremely good. Yeah, it's the same day. They're coming out the same day. The new XCOM game is coming out the same day as Mario XCOM. Mario plus Rabbids : XCOM. Oh, that's going to be a lot of tactics.
Yeah, that E3 demo was surprisingly great, and I've been anxious to see more because I felt like there were only showing like a fraction of what that game actually is. They've actually been very not cagey as much as just like they showed at E3. Mm-hmm. Like that was all I needed to be sold on. Mm-hmm. And now I just want to see I want to see how complex that game gets. Like I want to see how weird that game gets. So
that is going to be a week of takes, Patrick.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be one of those key take weeks where everybody is just going all over the place. Actually,
well, especially because 2 days after the 29th, where not only does Rabbids and XCOM and Windjammers drop.
The 29th, before we move on, the 29th is Absolver. Yep. Ark is finally actually coming out, I think.
Yeah, in retail.
Everybody's Golf. Hello Neighbor, I don't know what Hello Neighbor. Oh, yeah, I do. That's the thing you steal from people, you rob people. They had it at the Xbox event.
It's where like there's this guy chasing you.
Oh, okay.
In a house. It's been in early access for a while.
I imagine. I don't know why. I saw people breaking into houses at the demo. I was like, I guess you're a thief.
Yeah, there's houses. You break into them.
Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. Pillars of Eternity Complete comes out on consoles. The XCOM thing I mentioned, Red Out, I don't know what that is. No. Warriors All-Stars is a Warriors game. Is a like Dynasty Warriors game, but it's a crossover game for all of Koei Tecmo. So like the dude from Neo is in it. The characters from the Atelier RPGs are in it. Dead or Alive characters are in it. Characters from Deception are in it. Sure. Samurai Wars, there's a cat. It's Oda, Nobunaga Oda, but what if they were a cat instead of not a cat? I'm excited for that. And then Yakuza Kiwami, which is Yakuza 1 remake, is also, that's all on the 29th, and also Windjammers. That day is stacked. And then 2 days later, Life is Strange Before the Storm episode 1. That week is just gonna be bonkers.
Take City.
Welcome to Take City. We got takes. What do you want to hear about? You want to hear about golf? I got golf takes. Golf should be arcadey and cartoony the way it is in everybody's golf. Golf take. You want sports takes? Windjammers. Action plus frisbees. Action frisbee sports. AFS. That's the future of sports. A future sport. Action frisbee sports. AFS. Windjammers. Sports takes. I got sports takes. You want tactics takes? I only played one of them. But what happens if Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle is better than an XCOM game? Tactics takes. TT. Hashtag TT. I got takes. Too many takes. TMT. Dynamite. That's with an N normally, but...
Is that the television channel we're starting? Too many takes?
Too many takes. Television. God. That's going to be a lot of takes that week.
So that's August.
Oh, and then we have to just dip into September, Patrick.
Just, come on.
If we can get out of the pool of takes, if we can swim out, if we're submerged.
What are you talking
the
about? The biggest takes are happening on September 5th.
You're right. We're going to jump out of the frying pan of takes and into the fire of takes. Because Knack 2, baby. Back to Knack. Knack to Knack. Back to back, Knack to Knack. Knack 2 comes out September 5th. Get ready.
I'm going to finally become the Knack daddy that I've always wanted to be.
Oh, that's
no, not like a Knack daddy, but like, you know, the Knack daddy.
Knack daddy.
Like
He'll make you jump.
Exactly, yeah. That's not good. Like a Knack daddy. I mean, I'm sure there are I don't know how daddies work in the Knackiverse. Okay. Like, I don't.
Do you know how daddies work in the R-verse?
Well.
Do you have any more? Let's pivot. Do you have any more daddy experience? Talk about August.
I'm too raw right now. I don't know if I can talk about what happened Daddy this morning.
Wait. So, you got to give me a little something.
So in Dream Daddy, you go, if you aren't aware, it's a dad dating simulator. Mm-hmm. You all exist on Dad Book, which is a social network for dads.
Dads only.
I don't know if it's made by dads. I don't know. They don't get too much into the creation of the dad book in Dream Daddy. But it's a visual novel, and you can go on you can choose to and dad book to like go on different, not necessarily dates, but like experiences, like excursions. Like you might go with your kid to a baseball game.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily a date, but like some sort of social interaction that involves just coincidentally extremely attractive, mm-hmm. also live in the same cul-de-sac as you, dads in Maple Bay, which is still one of the better video game cities names I've ever heard of. And I had gone on a bunch of dates. I hadn't explored all my options, but I was like, I need to pick a dad. Mm-hmm. I need to see where this is going. If you decide to go on the third social excursion, the game gives you a heads up, like, hey, you're choosing your dream daddy. Like, are you ready for that? And what might happen? I said, yes, I am. And so I picked Matt, who is OP. He is the first daddy that you meet in the game.
OP? What's OP in this scenario?
He's too much. He's got too much going for him. He's too charming. He's too handsome.
Okay.
He's eccentric. He's like really. He runs a coffee shop.
Oh, he's a cool dad. Look at this dad.
He's into indie music, and he does a bunch of dad jokes for the names of his coffees, and you can help craft some of those dad jokes with him. And like the canonical dad in the game, which you get some leeway over his personality, but like the baseline of the character you play in Dream Daddy is like a goofy, means well, mm-hmm. like dad ass dad. And that, there's only like a limited spectrum you have to play with in terms of like that actual personality. You can pick what they look like, but like the personality is pretty well defined. And Matt lines up a lot with that, and also lines up a lot with Like, I thought he was funny and charming.
Right.
Like, I like coffee.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I want to hang out at this coffee shop. And Matt's got some hang-ups.
Plus, like, there's that whole situation where you're like, you've mentioned this before, your daughter is like, hey, dad, it's time for you to go out in the world and do stuff.
Yeah.
What could you do better than, like, hooking up with a coffee dad and then helping him run his coffee shop? That sounds really good.
Yeah, and, like, some of the – I don't want to get too much into, like, the actual, like, story arcs of the characters, but, like, Matt has he's a single dad because he lost someone close to him. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of the arc that you have with him, or at least my version of it, I don't know all the different – paths you can go down involves like kind of like helping him get out of his shell and like getting over some of that, and like the conclusion of my arc was me being like really involved in this thing happening, and then once it happens, like Matt, so he kisses me and he says we should go back to my place, like cut to black, and I'm like, cool,
you did
like, I did it like I don't know what I did, but I did it. I think like the game, in the words of Geeta Jackson, she was slightly disappointed in this game because there ain't no dick, is I think how she put it.
All right. It doesn't
go. There's a Twitter exchange.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is public. This is public.
Yeah. People go to these games for different things. There's no dick in this one.
Well, I would say, like, slight aside, that this is, like, a slightly different type. Like, it is – this game is not as horny as I think some people thought it could have been.
Sure.
Like, it is
– those games
actually
exist.
Right. And like, yo, like there is sex and like sexual tension, but like as I wrote about, and then was it Janine Hawkins who wrote about it for us last week? Who else wrote on?
No,
about
Kate Gray wrote about it.
Kate Gray
week.
Wrote about it. And she wrote a piece that was explicitly about like the wholesomeness of Dream Daddy, which is very true. Like there is like sex and relationships and sexual situations, but like it is a pretty wholesome, let's hug it out sort of game with some of that saucier stuff on the side.
Right.
So then the game cuts to an epilogue, and I won't get into the epilogue, but basically, like Matt had me meet him over by the tree, and
is it a special
it was like,
tree?
Hey,
what's up with this tree?
No, it's just like a tree, like in our backyard, and it's kind of like a party vibe going on, and like that's when he told me like, hey, I just, you know, you mean a lot to me. I just want to be friends. And,
no,
and I'm a little bummed because like. I didn't have any agency in the matter. Like, it was just sort of like...
But you couldn't be like, but...
Yeah. Like, give me a chance.
Did
like,
that kiss
went
mean
wrong?
Anything? Right.
I don't know how much time has passed. Like, I don't... Patrick. So, yeah, I ended up with Matt as my friend. Woo. I got friends, Matt. I don't need any more fucking friends.
Hey. Friends are good. Friends are
I've
good.
I've got them, though.
There's nothing wrong with having a friend that you kiss sometimes. Or, like, that you did
kiss.
I don't
kiss. Know if that... Well, that's... He didn't make it clear whether if that's the kind of weird, like, not only do I not need any more fucking friends, but I guess I could use a fucking friend.
You could
use
a fucking friend.
Huh?
I got
a fucking friend?
I got you. But I guess the question is, like, is this a situation where, okay, so in a situation like this.
That might break my heart, because I don't know if, even if I was given that option,
right.
I might have to say no, because.
You don't want
to
be a warm body.
My heart was not in a fucking friend.
Right. You were looking for love. You were out here looking for your dream daddy.
Yeah.
You thought
you
found him, and instead you went to Heartbreak City. Like
I did. And we're all in the same cul-de-sac together.
Oh,
that's a problem.
Oh, wait. I didn't know that from the jump. I didn't know y'all lived near each other. That's
everyone's
a whole
in
fucking
the same cul-de-sac.
What? Don't fuck any of those people. That's how I've been to college. Like, you can't...
College is just a cul-de-sac.
College is just 17 cul-de-sacs stacked on top of each other. That's the residence hall you live in. You gotta go at least to a different residence. You have to at least go to the next cul-de-sac over.
Yeah.
Don't date... All right, if you're in college right now, let me tell you, don't date anybody who lives on your floor. Do not.
Definitely not.
Do not.
You know you think
you
want it.
You can make out once. You can make out once.
The convenience of it seems real good.
Yep.
Like, oh, like, everyone's going to sleep. Like, I could just, like, head over there and not have to, like, go
outside. We just
crawl
into bed together. No. College take. Don't do it. Hookup take. Don't
wait,
do it.
Don't go to college?
Don't go to college. No. Don't. I didn't know that you were all in the same cul-de-sac. Because now everybody knows. Everybody's going to see you out by the tree.
Yeah.
Now I understand what you meant. You're like, oh, the tree. Like, yeah, everybody in the cul-de-sac knows the tree.
Well, and then the game just presumes, like, oh, this won't be awkward, like, going forward. Like,
okay.
Game, I think you're taking a too optimistic, idealistic interpretation of how this shit's going to go down.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, maybe you took a lot from the experience. Maybe you're...
Maybe.
You're not this daddy yet. You know, you're the daddy you played as has an 18-year-old daughter, not a 1-year-old daughter. So one. So maybe 18 years from now, or 17, however many years it is, you'll be in a place where maybe having a brief hookup with your dream daddy can be something you learn from, something sure. that you cherish. But then you also understand it isn't just about your agency. He has agency too. He doesn't.
I get it.
He's not in that place right now.
Sure.
And he extends the offer of friendship. And maybe you don't even. Maybe it's one of those friendships where it's like you see him once in a while, and you both know it's just
yeah,
like
we're in the same
awkward.
Cul-de-sac. No, like this is not.
You should sell that house and move.
It's not a cul-de-sac. It's a fuck-a-sac. It's just dads just doing things.
You don't know that. You don't know the other dads. I mean, you would know.
Oh,
if it was.
Austin, you haven't met these dads.
So, okay, I have a question. Was this a bad end, or was this like? Did you...
I don't know if it's a bad. I don't know if this game has like bad. And like we ended in a good place. Like
right.
I was actually disappointed in the ending because of the leap it makes without like quite getting me there.
Right.
Like it didn't feel satisfying. Like if I had seen more of the in between, I could have bought like why it didn't work out.
Right.
As opposed to it felt like cut to black. Like we went to go
hook
shack
up. Right. Yeah.
And then it's like ... However, we're time later. Like oh, actually, it doesn't work out. We're just friends. Like oh,
right.
like
is that because you didn't
buy...
have enough affection points
yes.
with Matt? And if so, that wasn't made clear. Right.
So I can buy the ending. I just didn't actually from like a design perspective. I found it disappointing because like I got to see so much of the arc up until
right.
the turn.
Right.
And then whatever stuff happens behind the scenes that determines the ending, I just didn't buy. I bought the turn like on paper,
but
I didn't get to see enough of the fill in the blanks to see like how we got to that point. It's
totally.
Kind of just like, oh, like shit, like all right, so because I failed some mini game, like it didn't work out, or
right.
maybe
that
not.
Would
like
suck. That would be the worst.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because that's like, so, I mean, that's just like in real life too, though, to some degree, right? Which is like,
yeah.
when you get a rejection and it's like, did I fuck up at some point? Like,
right.
Is this because I ordered the wrong drink that time? Is this because, like, I was kind of a jerk that time that her friend was over and I really don't like her friend, but, like, I could have just, like, carried that back more? Is this the time that, like, you know, he and I went out to that club and I was shit-talking a band and then I realized later, uh-oh, he really likes that band. He was in that band once or whatever. Like, that's how the world works sometimes. You don't know why things fall apart. Sometimes they fall apart because he wants to pay more attention to his coffee shop than you right now. I mean, that's just it.
Well, and then it made me angrier because I posted this on Facebook and also just Gina Jackson, just she...
Uh-huh. What happened? Okay.
I mentioned in one of her Facebook threads on Facebook, they're like, oh, I went for Matt, and I was just a friend. She says, that's not the ending I just got.
Yo! Yo!
Bullshit.
Yo!
Pouring salt on the wound.
Well, now we know why he didn't shack up with you. The game checked your friends list, and it was like, oh, Gita already got him.
That would be a funny way for those games to interact, if you could somehow, like, loop it into your... Like, the other decisions it makes about your friends is, like, it can fuck you over because, I already chose your friend Gita.
Uh-huh. God, that would be brutal. And then it downloads her dad, and it's like, her dad just slides on screen. How good.
Oh, that would be good.
That would be incredible.
We should delete this part from the podcast.
We gotta
make
this
game.
Make
a visual novel.
Yes. Yes, dreamier daddy. Let's go. Oh my god. Speaking of bad ends, I just briefly want to mention that there was this Broadly article on Dream Daddy where they talked to some of the creators about the rumored cult ending that we talked about last week.
There's been a controversy that's happened largely on Tumblr in which the game was data mined for, which is common these days for developers these days need to like account for data mining because that shit's going to get out. And they found reference to sort of a bad end that I'm not going to spoil. It's related to Joseph for people that are Joseph and his kids related. Like if you're familiar with the game and the characters, and there is a sort of shitty interpretation of what that ending could mean and say about It's queer characters right. in a game that is very queer friendly and like written in a way that is very not just like inclusive, but is like of mind of like queer relationships
yeah.
and just it's a very queer friendly game, and like that ending can be interpreted in kind of a shitty way.
Right.
And so there's like a controversy or a debate over like how are you to interpret content that was cut from the game
yeah.
for who knows what reason. Maybe it wasn't finished. Maybe they realized actually like this is bad and mm-hmm. like we shouldn't include it in the game. And then how are you supposed to feel about the
cut
discovery
content.
Of complicated content
yeah.
Even though it's not in the game? My take on that is like, yo, if you read all the stuff I did in rough drafts, like that people like look through and like tell you, hey, this is like a better way to phrase this. Like they're better. Like you should be aware of this. Mm-hmm. Like, we all make mistakes all the time and, like, probably shouldn't be judged for the thing that we don't put out
hit publish on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I think that part's complicated, but I also think that there are all these other axes on which this moment is landing and is, like, being – is opening up the space for, like, lowercase d discourse. I don't mean, like,
yeah.
dismissive – I don't mean that dismissively here. I actually mean, like, there is – there's a lot at the table here in terms of queer representation. And so the argument that a lot of people have made – the one that I'm not super convinced by it is that like having a problematic character in the sense of like not capital P problematic either, lowercase p problematic.
Right.
Having like an evil gay dude in this game filled with gay or bi dudes is totally okay for me. Like part of the thing that I always say when people come to me and say, hey, I want there to be black characters in games, but I'm afraid what if my black character isn't good? My answer is like, have more than one black character. Like the more representation that you have, like the better chances you are of actually having a kind of a broad scope of representation and having the one character who's evil not just fit into some weird stereotype, right?
It's not a burden because
right.
it's singular. It's
so
like it fits into a spectrum of characters because there's a plurality of characters.
Exactly.
So if you want a character to go off the reservation or even you're, like mildly riff on a stereotype, it's okay in the sense that it's not the sole
right.
representation.
Exactly.
Like
there's already
a larger spectrum.
There's already a counter argument against that being a core representation of what that kind of identity is. That said, I still also understand where that comes from to some degree.
Yeah.
Like I think that comes from a place of seeing shitty representation over and over and over
right.
again, and it being a sore spot, an understandable sore spot. Trauma is shitty. So that's one place where that's coming in. That's one angle of the debate. There's also this other thing that's happening around this game that I think is really fascinating that happens – you know, does not only happen in queer culture. It also happens, again, across other kind of marginalized identities. As those identities – as the – okay, so part of being in the margins means finding a way to create culture for yourself. That means, you know, everything from musical scenes, like, you know, doing weird art, experimental art, finding new ways of self-expression. Dating culture is different. Like, all sorts of stuff happens when you're in the margins to reflect the fact that you are stuck in the margins, right? You're not part of mainstream culture because that part has been, at best, gated to you, and sometimes you can slip through the gate, or at worst, completely walled off for you. And so you end up developing your own culture because you're a person and people develop culture. It's what we do. And so one of the conversations that's happening around this game is whether or not it is this – not appropriative, right? Like not – because I know that some of the creators are queer.
Mm-hmm.
But is this kind of – whitewashing is probably too strong of a term, but is this sort of kind of professionalization or like it's cleaning up queer culture and making it presentable to a wide, straight, cis audience in the sense that it is – it's almost aspirational. It's almost about – so it's not appropriative, but it's about what's the word I'm looking for? When one thing takes in something else and consume – not just consumes it, but there's a specific word I'm looking for that's going to kill me if I can't come up with it. It's
well,
like
keep going and then it'll
okay,
come
it'll,
to
it'll
you
come
like
to me.
30 seconds from now.
So yeah, it's a situation where the mainstream culture – it's kind of like incorporating queer culture into the already standard mainstream – assimilation. Thank you, chat. It's assimilating queer culture instead of just – exploring the queer culture that really exists in the world. Like I've just seen a lot of people saying I haven't played this game, right? So, but I'm
right.
seeing a lot of people saying I don't see my experience of being a queer person in this game. What I'm seeing is like queer culture dressed up with white picket fences. What I'm seeing is is gay people who are all upper middle class and who have the dream
right.
of being assimilated And that might be okay if also there was this counterculture element there. But instead, right. it's just this – which is also, by the way, the same argument that, that came out around 50 Shades of Grey and kink culture, which was like – that's a story in which the end game is like there. It's a shitty, abusive relationship, and then they own a house together and like get a white picket fence. That is not like that's just like traditional buttoned up like white capitalist. Like you're just going to the office now. And I think that conversation is super fascinating because that reflects a longer tension inside of queer discourse and margin and discourse around race and around class and everything else, which is like this moment at which. Punk becomes a thing you can put in top 40 radio. The moment right. that hip hop crosses over and goes from being something that represents a shout to being something that can sell you a can of Sprite. Like, and that is a thing that's happened with queer culture for a long time anyway. But this is like the first time that I'm seeing it happening in gaming where that's, and I don't think it's simple. Like this isn't, Electronic Arts isn't making this game. This isn't big right. business capitalizing, but it is game grumps who are well established. It is, you know, there are elements that it doesn't feel like what traditionally you thought of as the queer games scene, quote unquote, which is a much more complicated thing than anything else. And I love that those conversations are happening. I just also think that they're incredibly complex and I wish I had more time to like try to unwrap it a little bit.
But it's also cool that a game like this can inspire, right. like, one, it, like, surfaces that discussion to non-queer folks that aren't, like, deep into the queer mm-hmm. gaming scene and representation and have, like I've never heard the argument framed that way before. Like, right. that makes a lot of sense
yeah,
to me.
Totally.
But there's no reason for me to really have known that because, like, I don't spend a lot of time in
those
queer relationship
right.
culture, like, because I'm not. And so, like, the exposure to that, the discussion of that, like, the existence of a game that is, like, is like for the you know by and large queer friendly and like right. very respectful of queer culture like surfaces like a lot of the tension and the problems and the discourse that's happening a little underneath the surface
mm-hmm.
that is in a really interesting way
totally
that makes like I mean me richer as lots
as a
of
person.
People richer
yeah.
as a result
totally
yeah.
I you know Internet Fiona says I want to live in a big house with all of my partners and their partners. I want to normalize kink and shit. I want to normalize my existence and not default to having to get married and get a house
right.
which is like that normal is that is like this other side of this which is like so tough because you know I don't know what to say to somebody who is 42 years old and gay and wants to own a house with a picket fence and wants to be part of – you don't want to say
right.
that, no, that's a bad dream to have, right? Like
right.
One of my favorite philosophers, Foucault, like went through this change in his work and in his life where when you read the young Foucault, he's like – all about discipline. He's all about like how is the world disciplining bodies? How is desire something that culture produces in you? Like you didn't come out of the womb wanting to do XYZ. Like you didn't come out of the womb with beauty standards. You were taught beauty standards. You didn't come out of the womb hating your body. You were taught to hate your body. You didn't come out of the womb thinking that sex is this dirty thing. You were taught to believe that. And then by the end of his life, he shifts a little bit and begins to talk about self-care and like and begins to say like, well, we do these things because, you know, to some degree, we feel better inside of the limits of society. And sometimes we do things that are capital P problematic, but it is part of being able to regenerate the energy you need to go out in the fucking world. That's terrible. And that tension is like really fascinating to me. It's always been one of the things that I'm most fascinated in because I don't think there's a final answer to it. I just think it's a thing I navigate on a case by case basis. And it's cool to have that conversation in games. Like it's not a thing I expected to have this year. So
yeah, like related to that, like in dad culture, like,
right.
like parenting culture, like one of the big political things that sort of comes up in conversation with other parents is like this generational shift that's happened in like the last like, you know, 50 years of like not all women are stay at home
yep.
mothers.
Yep.
And you have to be extremely cautious when you encounter a new set of parents and how you approach that
really?
Discussion. Because like me and
yeah.
my wife are like big on like her career is very important to her.
Uh-huh.
And like we spend lots of time with our daughter. Like we don't think we're sacrificing anything by
right.
like having her maintain her job. But like there are people who have made the decision that they wanted to stay home. Like sometimes it's financial. Sometimes it's cheaper for them to do that. Sometimes it is because they want to be a stay-at-home parent. And boy, like you got to be careful at how you express your opinions on that because that shit can go sideways uh-huh. like super fast.
Yep.
Because it is like this really weird cultural shift that has happened that people – some of that is like culture put upon them, and some of them it's people making their own decision on what they do, and culture plays a part in that. But, whew,
yeah,
that's politics.
That's politics. God. All right, let's go to the question bucket with our limited time that's remaining. If you have questions, you can send them in to gaming@vice.com with the subject question or question bucket or questions. I'll see them in any
or
way
bucket.
Like that. Or bucket. You know what? Just know and make sure question is there. I don't have a label set. I don't have a filter set up for bucket. All right, this comes in from Josh. We had a bunch of questions in a row that were really good Patrick Austin questions, so this worked out. One, hello, I played through all the main endings of Nier Automata, primarily because Patrick spoke very highly of it, and that guy's cool, I guess. I felt that throughout I could follow along with the themes and ideas presented by the game just fine, but whenever something interesting came up, and there were tons of neat bits about individual and social purpose, gender, robot fucking, etc., I often didn't really care because I was not emotionally invested in most other aspects of the game. Aesthetically and narratively, Nier didn't click much for me, and I think that made it a lot harder to engage with the ideas that it presents, though the ideas themselves were of interest. I was more engaged with the spoiler cast that y'all did than the game itself. When thinking critically about games, do you think you're less likely to take in a game's philosophical and ideological insights if the game itself doesn't really grab you? Become as gods, Josh. With that note, I think that there are times. Like, there are definitely times when I'm like, I'm just going to go to a wiki. Like, I'm not I'll pull the eject cord on this because I'm interested in the ideas here, but not I don't want to play it. And I just, like, let myself not do that at this point in my life. And I definitely think that it hurts. Like, I think the same thing is true for film or books also. Like, there's so many books that I've read where I'm like, the ideas here are fascinating, and also this prose is garbage. Like, I can't read this. Or films where, like, the cinematography is terrible, the acting is rough, but there's – especially in film where it's, like, an experimental film or it's an independent film or a young filmmaker who doesn't necessarily have, a head for camera work or for direction yet, or young actors who maybe are still, like, coming up, but the ideas in the script might still be interesting, or the idea in the setting might still be interesting. That happens to me all the time. Honestly, especially in games.
Yeah, I think actually in Nier, I found myself more affected by the high level sort of like themes than I was in the actual like interpersonal drama of the individual, like the actual characters to be and stuff like that. Like when I would explain what was happening to them, I found it more affecting than the moment to moment, like their actual dialogue and emotional response. If that makes any sense. When I to write out the plot of that game, like in explaining it, when I would write about it and talk about it, I found myself responding to that more than like the actual beat to beat of like how those characters were responding to the moments of those stories, which I'm not sure if that's a fault of the storytelling or me just not connecting to those characters, but I can see why that the person writing in had that response. You can hear people talking about like what happens and go, oh wow, that's wild, but in the actual moment to moment, not necessarily connecting it on that level. I mean, I'd say that's not true for like some of the like the later endings, like specifically the credit sequence stuff that happens. Like I just connected to that in the moment as it was happening, but I don't think it's totally wild to find your enjoyment out of like reading about it or people's responses to it rather than actually being a part of the media itself.
Right. I'm with you. I think that all adds up for me too. It's a tough thing. There are strategies for it, which are like, for me, as someone who writes about games, as long as I'm staying engaged and taking notes, I can push through stuff that sometimes can be boring. Like, I often will use bad cutscenes in games or too long of cutscenes in games, like tab over to a notepad or to a Google Doc and like start writing stuff as the stuff is happening. Still paying attention, but like that's a breather that I can – and like that's where I can like keep engaged at the high level thing. All right. This one comes in from Mike, who says, have you ever given thought to setting up a Steam curator list or something similar? It would be nice to see a list of games that you all like that might have been overlooked. For example, I had zero interest in Long Live the Queen until it was – praised in a recent episode. Thanks for doing the show, Mike. So I think we've been talking about ways to curate our
doing something. Yeah,
I have weird feelings about Steam curation in general. Like, one, it was broken for a long time. Two, I very much would rather have it be on our platform than on Steam.
Right.
Like, I am not in the business of putting content on Steam. Like, I'm not on the business of
that. Doesn't help us.
It doesn't help us
about it.
To be crass, but also I prefer, I, you know, I'd actually be more likely to make an itch.io curators right. list. I have a lot of mixed thoughts about Steam and Valve as a company. I think that they're doing a poor job of curating their own store right now. I think that they, given their important position in the field, need to be doing more to help kind of foreground games that are coming out, support young developers, and that's not my job. It's not my job to go do that curation work for them. They're not paying us to do that. If they want to, like, sponsor a Waypoint curation thing, we can have that conversation. But that's not, like, what the job is that we are in. And I bring this up, actually, I like this question because, like, I've had this conversation so often in the last couple of years of just, like, especially in the last year as they've opened up the platform. Like, how do you deal with an open platform like that? How do you curate it? I think it's a hard job. There was a game that just came out called Immortal Planet that really helped, like, crystallize this for me. It's an action RPG. It's isometric. It has very, like, cel-shaded, cartoonish look. Very Dark Souls-inspired with the stamina system. Lots of, you know, a very deliberate action. You know, you get a single healing item that you can use. Like, it's very similar in design. And it's exactly the sort of game that 5 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, I would have noticed pop up in my weekly review of the Steam new releases and would have said, like, oh, man, I'll toss $12 to this and check it out. But today, it's so easy to imagine a game like this. I don't think this game looks great. Like, I don't think it looks fantastic. But I think it looks like oh, yeah, I'd pay $12
play
to give
it for
a shot,
45 minutes,
see if I can do a video on it or whatever, right? And now, it's just there's so much that drops that I think that it's one of those exact games that could so easily slip through the cracks despite young developers putting a lot of hard work into it. So I do think that there is need from curation on Valve's part and on our part as a place that people come to for opinions. It's tough. We don't run reviews right now, right? We don't have a thing that says buy this game. Like, it's not the job that we've put ourselves in at this point. But it is something we're thinking about because people do come to us and say, hey, I want to know what games I should buy. And that's,
or just like, what are, like, we put up so much, you know, like a sort of ephemeral content, like podcasts and live streams in which, like, if you're not staying up on that stuff, like, maybe you don't know, like, what some of our favorite games have been this year, or, like, if people are interested in, like, the top 10 anime games, you know, like, there are ways that, like, we're giving a lot of thought, especially kind of, like, in this fall as things start to ramp up again, ways that we can sort of condense sort of, like, a lot of what our preferences are and things we like that can point people – that essentially do what you're asking for from a Steam curation, which is basically you're saying, like, hey, what's that shit you like that I can just kind of reference? Like, I want to know what, like, Waypoint's into right now. The Steam curation is a way to do that that makes it easy for you to buy it.
Yep.
I'm not sure we're as interested in the connected to consumer part, but we are interested in making something that gives people a sense of, like, what either us as individuals or as a site are into right now and have been into.
Yeah. So believe me, we're thinking about it. So hang tight. This one comes in from M in New York City, who says, good morning, Waypointians. Waypointians? I don't know. Waypointians. This question is mostly focused for Austin and Patrick, since they've been streaming Battlegrounds almost every morning for months, which is unbelievable. But I'd love to hear from all of you. I'm sure you've seen the community drama over a Redditor being banned for supposedly stream sniping two popular streamers. As people who've been immersed in games for a long time and have frequently streamed different games, do you feel that stream sniping is as common as some are claiming, with 15 to 20 snipers per match? Or is this a case of confirmation bias in a small sample size? Thanks for your time. Best, M from New York City.
Well, I don't have any access to the numbers
either.
Stream sniping, so that's difficult to, like, actually, like, drill down. My guess is somewhere in between. It's more than you think and less than is exaggerated.
Yeah.
We haven't had any problems with that, but we also, you know, someone like Dr. Disrespect is streaming to 20,000 people. And so just by sheer viewer count, like, if you're basing it on the folks that are streaming to tens of thousands of people, they're just by sheer volume going to run into more of those people because there are more people that can roll the dice, right?
Like,
there are more people that can hit play and then see if they got into that match. Whereas, you know, with us, where we're averaging, you know, 600 to 1,000 people who are tuning into an individual stream, like, it's just a smaller crowd. Also, like, we heavily curate our community. And so I think we just attract the kind of people that are coming to Waypoint watching our stuff. I think we're attracting less people that are interested in griefing and trolling. And
totally. We have been attempted to be stream sniped before, but like in a way that I think is a lot less. I don't know. It's such a complex thing, and I think it's weird to see what the response
is. It's fine for it to be there's like a playful version of stream sniping. It was just like, hey, I want to play with Austin and Patrick and hopefully run into them. Like, that's cool. Like, I get that.
But there's a difference when it's like I'm watching their screen to find out where they are. What's wild is I saw, you know, they made PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds official. I think it was Brendan's official Twitter was like, yeah, we take this really seriously and we punish it. And the responses to that tweet in that thread were just like, that's bullshit. Why would you ever ban somebody for stream sniping? They just want to play with their favorite player. This is ridiculous. And it's like, y'all have no room in your hearts to even think about the other perspective, huh? Like, you just have made your minds that there is anything goes, period, the end, no matter what. And it's just a very strange thing for me. I don't know. It's weird.
It was very interesting about this game, especially given the concurrent information that came out this week about how the PlayerUnknown as number three on the all-time sort of concurrent players, just under 500,000. It is interesting that Brendan Green, the chief designer behind this game, PlayerUnknown, takes such a personal, hands-on approach and response to like flare-ups in the community, specifically related to bannings, where he will respond to reports in his Twitter feed and either himself or hand off himself to his team. Like, you just don't see that with games of that scale. My guess is one of the first things that's going to stop happening is him doing that, because I don't think he should be the person going out there and like providing the evidence and making the case for like different bands. Like, that's a team thing.
Yeah.
It also
hand it off to a comm manager.
Yeah, it's like that's what your community team should be handling. And also, it makes him such a focal point over, like, if that stuff gets messy, if that, like, maybe they make a mistake, like, it going all on him is a tough thing. But at the same time, this is something I thought about, and as I think about ways of talking about this game, I find it endlessly fascinating that there is someone who is such a focal point.
Yeah.
That is not usually true for a lot of games. I guess we see this sometimes, like, Luke Smith is kind of like that with Destiny.
Yeah.
Brendan Green is kind of like that with, or definitely is that with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Kaplan is kind of that with
similar,
with,
but I don't
with Overwatch. Like
Robert Bowling for a while was like that. Yeah. Obviously, back in those days, like I don't know. It's that part's interesting, and I think that even in our chat, we had someone just now say like, come on, the streamers have every tool in their disposal to prevent stream sniping. Like, and I saw that argument a lot. Like, oh, you just delay your stream by 2 minutes. Think about how bad our streams would be if they were delayed by 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
It would suck. Like, I don't know. I think that there is a conversation to have here, but it's so fascinating to me to see that conversation isn't a devil's advocate conversation. That isn't a conversation where people are saying, well, hypothetically, stream sniping isn't bad because XYZ. It's lots of people saying stream sniping is good, actually. And like, you're not bringing anything to bear to make that case. It's lots of people saying, like, prove it. Prove there's a stream sniper. And, like, the second that starts happening, the second that's your position, like, that's sus. Like, I see where you're going with that. Like, that ends up being just a real shitty default position to be, like, to tell the people who run the game that they're lying about who they're banning for stream sniping. Like, at that point, there has been a breach of trust. Trust has been destroyed at some level. And there's a larger issue there that y'all have to work through. So,
well, and it's also difficult because we're talking about a game that has been sold 5 million times.
Yes, that's a huge number.
That is a huge number, and so even when you have, let's say, thousands or even tens of thousands of people complaining about, like, let's say this, say like this specific thing, that is a tiny part of that community. And so it's so hard. This is such a difficult part with whether it's running a community from like Waypoint or running a community like in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, is like when you're dealing with large sections of people, like how much should you even be paying deference to the most vocal folks that are saying something, because they may not actually be representative of anything. They're just representative by virtue of speaking up when most people choose not to for all sorts of reasons. So
totally.
Not the first time we've had a conversation like that. Probably won't be the last. But I like the fact that that Brendan Green takes control of his community and tries to when I wrote about that thing a couple of weeks ago about how he like reacted to the role play violence from Dr. Disrespect. Like, and then there's a lot of complicated ways to look at that. And I think there is even a potentially valid way that is that maybe he overreacted to something on Twitter. But the fact that his response to role play violent rhetoric was to share his own personal story about violence, like, there are not many game designers that do that. So I'd rather designers err on the side of being more like that, even if it's a little reactionary, mm-hmm. because that's just not something you see out. You don't see designers with this such a large public face being that vulnerable and involved.
Right.
And, like, I'd rather have more of that than totally. Than not.
Last question. This one comes in from Portage Lily from Portage in Michigan. I was like, Portage, that's an interesting name. Lily from Portage, Michigan, who says, hello, Waypoint Radio. When Austin and Patrick had Giant Bomb's Vinny Caravella and Alex Navarro around for breakfast in Battlegrounds, when Vinny mentioned that later that day they were going to do a feature where they were going to play Super Mario Sunshine, which Austin referred to as a war crime, Patrick countered the game as incredible. It seems to me that both of these assessments are dishonest appraisals of the game. As someone who played it when it came out and enjoyed it, I feel like the honest thing to say about it is that it's a flawed game that plenty of people were able to have a lot of fun with. The movement was tight and fun, but the shooting and camera were very bad, and if you can't get past that second part, then you won't like it. However, something in people's brain shuts down when games like this are discussed. I feel the same thing happens with Twilight Princess. Yeah, it was too long and the wolf sections are bad, but the double hookshot was super rad, and a Zelda or a Mario game that falls short of expectations is still better than most games. But people often shoot instantaneously to either extreme of them being total garbage or a precious baby that can do no wrong and must be protected at all costs, even critics like Austin, who usually have very nuanced takes on games. Why do you think that these big games and beloved franchises that didn't quite hit the mark cause people to lose their minds? Lily, love the podcast, Lily, from Michigan. For me, one, the thing I was saying was a war crime was that feature, not playing the game. As someone who does video on the internet, I cannot imagine sitting in a room with Dan Reichert, who loves Super Mario Sunshine, mm-hmm. and, like, watching someone play through that game or doing the thing they're doing, just handing off the controller. Like, I don't like that game. Don't lock me in a room with that game. That's terrible. so that's, like, my main – that's my – actually, that's not my main. That's, like, my low-key answer to that specific question. I think that the second thing for me is just – being on a stream is so much different than writing criticism. Like, mm-hmm. being on a stream is like being at your friend's house on a couch and playing a game together and shit-talking a little bit and being a lot more off the cuff. And I almost always say things on stream where I make a little note in my head to be like, okay, I want to revisit this in a longer form piece, in something where I can actually expand on that instead of just having – and we have this conversation all the time where we're like, hey, we had this little conversation this week on the podcast. That could be a whole piece. That could be something where you dig into it deeper. And I think that just comes with the territory to some degree. Being a critic does not – like I've said before, you're always in critic – I'm always in critic mode. But that does not mean that I'm always particularly eloquent. It doesn't mean that I'm always in my most – thoughtful when it comes to saying things, and that is like that's like a tough bit of walking both lines. If all I did was write things, no one would ever see that other side of me. But it's not everything we do. We all have to be multi-talented right now, and so you get to see us at our most reactive and our most kind of relaxed and thoughtful and our most edited. Also,
I think also with games that you played years ago, you tend to think of in binary terms,
right?
Because the experience is not particularly fresh. So my guess is if I went back and played Super Mario Sunshine, I would come to similar conclusions as the person who wrote in. But I did really like that game. My guess is I still would really like that game. But like, absent the context of having played it recently, mm-hmm. where I could articulate like what I really liked about it and why that shines,
sunshines. Collect those shines.
Mm-hmm. Above the things that are don't really work, like my brain like flips to the binary, which is like, actually it was great,
right.
Because there's no way for me to articulate or even rebut the criticisms or the problems with the game, because I don't have anything except for my mind being like, yo, I liked that game a lot more than people did at the time.
Yeah,
and I think
people
were harsher on that game because it was a radical restructuring of how it was to play a Mario game. And that colored more of their opinion than actually what was good or bad about that
game. I mean, I didn't play a lot of that game when it came out. I played a little bit. I didn't have a GameCube, so I only ever played it over at friends' houses. I hated what I played of it. And then the last year, I've been watching my friends Keith and Kyle over at RunButton, youtube.com/RunButton, play through Super Mario Sunshine. So I've like seen all that level design again in the last year and thought it looked bad and like don't like any of the movement mechanics and like don't – I think there's like – wait, there's like some basic design stuff that like really rubs me the wrong way. And so – that encourages me to be like, oh, it's garbage. Fuck that. Like, and that is not – again, that is not a fully well-researched position. I've not spent, you know, the last 5 months in the Super Mario Sunshine mines thinking deeply about that level design. If I did, maybe I could have a more you know, cogent argument against it. But it does also, I think, it, you know, you go to your hyper extremes on a stream, and then you dial them back in when it comes down to sit down and write something. Right. And, you know, I think we do our best to be thoughtful around that stuff. But there is just part of what we provide is an experience of hanging out with your friends. Like, part of the product of a life, of every live stream, is it's just us. We're just fucking around. Fuck you, you're wrong. Oh, yeah, that's the best.
Kingdom Hearts is bad because Kingdom Hearts is bad.
Right, that's what you say. And you know it isn't. You understand that lots of people really – you know that
– Oh, I understand.
You understand that millions of people love Kingdom Hearts, and you're not taking that away from them, and you're not disputing that they do legitimately –
I'm allowing – people are allowed to like bad things every day.
Right. I understand. I haven't played those games. They've never been my thing, so I haven't even tried. So – but, it's tough. It's a tough line to walk because you don't want to – sometimes it boils up in you, and you go, that game is fucking – like, Mass Effect Andromeda, I put my fucking time into that game. I think that game is terrible. But also –
I don't think I'm ever going to play it. That's
you
a,
shouldn't.
A weird
but also,
feeling.
I saw a friend of mine play through it, and they were tweeting about it on Twitter this weekend and saying, like, that game is really good. And I know
that
I'm –
a visceral reaction?
I did, but then I know I'm an adult now because I didn't message her. I wasn't like, no, you're wrong. Her specific thing was like, nope, now I can't – you can't go down this path because now I'm subtweeting somebody. I'm not doing it. She's allowed to like that game. She's allowed to like that game. That's totally fine. Let it out. I think that's going to do it for us today. This has been a good one. Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me hating on Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, my God.
At Patrick Klupik.
You can find me on Twitter, at Austin_Walker. Tim, this is – I don't know if Patrick knows this now, right? Okay.
Yeah.
This is – I'm sorry to say, Tim Barnes, our last day – last point producing Waypoint Radio. Not the last day at Vice Total, but the last Waypoint Radio with Tim's beautiful touch. He's moving on to bigger and better things. I'm very excited about where – I can't say where he's going. I'm not allowed. He's told me no, but it's dope. So make sure to follow Tim at TimBarnes451. If you've liked this show in the last year – if you've liked the show in the last 8 months or something like that, when did you start?
October.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. October, yeah. Tim started. It has been a better show because of Tim. Tim has made us sound great and has been with us all the way since we used to be in a weird little side cabinet room till now. And that has been fantastic. So thank you so much, Tim, for helping us out. Make sure to listen to whatever he does next, and you can find that at TimBarnes451 on Twitter. So follow him there. Thank you also to Natalie Watson, who is our fantastic intern who has been streaming with us now for a couple of months. Also coming up on her last day as an intern fairly soon. Not yet, but, you know, soon. So thank you again to both of you. Again, Natalie's not going anywhere yet. We'll have another sad goodbye shortly, I'm sure. So thank you both. As always, you can find more information about us at waypoint.vice.com, at twitch.tv/waypoint, at youtube.com/waypointvice, at facebook.com/waypointvice. I think that's it. Oh, Bowen. Shout outs to Bowen, who lets us use his track, Miss You, off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more info about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle isn't here, so I guess no one has to be good or be good at it. We can be bad, Patrick. We're going to be bad.
Just like Kingdom Hearts.
Okay. Woo! All right. On that note, peace.